It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
It doesn't work well for anyone. It's not working well for the employers who are looking for the large labor force that they can use. It's not working well for the immigrants. People don't want to be undocumented immigrants. You know, they're trying to support their families. They'd love to adjust their status if there was a way.
Tim Freilich at the Immigrant Advocacy Program speaks on how immigrants are treated and mistreated under current law in the first of a two-part presentation. And although borrowing your own money at triple-digit interest rates sounds ridiculous, later in the show, you'll learn how and why that happens. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 32, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. A clampdown on high-cost instant loans took effect on January 1, but payday lenders already are finding ways around it. Starting this year, payday loans were limited to one at a time, with a minimum term equal to twice the borrower's pay cycle, and a waiting period of at least one day between loans. Payday lenders were required to offer extended payment plans and extended loan terms to borrowers unable to pay in full on time, and were limited in the number of loans to an individual borrower within a year. In a slap in the face of legislators, 11 payday lenders have sought and obtained approval to issue open-end loans for which there are virtually no limits on interest and payment terms, and to which the new law does not apply. 7 other payday lenders also want to offer such loans. Legislation further restricting payday lenders may be forthcoming. In other news, how would you like to pay a super high price to borrow money that already belongs to you? That's what happens to many folks at tax time. You may be tempted by tax time advertisements for fast cash refunds, express money, or instant refunds. These ads offer to get you a refund in just a day or two, or even on the spot. Beware. Many of these fast refunds are really refund anticipation loans. When you get one, you're borrowing against your own tax refund money. And these loans often are marketed to people who need money the most, low and moderate income workers who receive the earned income tax credit. Refund anticipation loans are extremely expensive. Loan fees typically range from $30 to $90, which is an annual interest rate anywhere from 60% to over 700%, all to get your tax refund just a few days earlier than you can for free. A great way to save money at tax time is to go to a volunteer income tax assistance site. For more information, call toll-free at 1-800-TAX-1040. Or go to www.tax-coalition.org. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright.
Turn me around, turn me around, turn me
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is workers' compensation. Workers' compensation is a state program to help workers who get injuries or diseases from their jobs. Generally, you are covered in Virginia if your employer has three or more employees. You can get workers' compensation medical and wage loss benefits for an injury if it arises out of and in the course of your job. The injury must occur at work or during a work-related activity. You also may get workers' compensation for a disease if it was caused by your work. However, the disease must arise out of and in the course of your job. Contact the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission for more information. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's Legal Term of the Week.
Failure to pass immigration reform on the federal level has left state and local officials trying to fix the problem on their own, leading to a climate of fear among Virginia's immigrants. Tim Fralick from the Immigrant Advocacy Center now takes us inside the Virginia immigrant communities, who they are, how they contribute to our economy, and how they are being affected by workplace and border enforcement in part one of a two-part presentation.
So all over the state, we see different sectors of the economy depending on a growing workforce of immigrants, both documented and undocumented. So what we have in Virginia right now and in the rest of the country is a failure on the federal level to pass comprehensive immigration reform, right? Regardless of what side of the debate you're on, there's pretty much universal agreement that our current federal immigration system is hopelessly broken and needs to be fixed. It doesn't work well for anyone. It's not working well for the employers who are looking for the large labor force that they can use. It's not working well for the immigrants. People don't want to be undocumented immigrants. You know, they're trying to support their families. They'd love to adjust their status if there was a way. It's not working well for localities that are struggling with different issues of populations within their communities that they can't easily identify, that aren't able to participate fully in the community. And it presents challenges on the state level as well. So what we've seen is with the federal government's failure to pass comprehensive immigration reform, lately in Virginia and a lot of states, we're seeing state and local elected officials basically saying, well, fine, you know, if the feds aren't going to do it, we're going to fix the immigration system right here in Virginia or in Prince William County or the town of Herndon or Culpeper. We're going to take things, you know, into our own hands. We have the power to try and do something, right? And so we see a lot of the state and local elected officials trying to fix the immigration system on their own. Now, what is really significant for service providers who are working with the immigrant communities of Virginia, and I'm saying communities, obviously there are many different immigrant communities in Virginia, different socioeconomic statuses, different national origins. You know, even we hear often about the Hispanic community in Virginia. Well, I have yet to see the Hispanic community. I mean, you have the Peruvian community, the Salvadoran community, the Bolivian community, the Mexican community. I mean, they're tremendously diverse communities in Virginia. But what's going on is, with the failure to pass comprehensive immigration reform, what the federal government has been doing is stepping up enforcement of the existing broken system, right? The existing laws that are on the books. And this is creating incredible fear in the immigrant communities of Virginia. So first, we'll talk briefly, who are the immigrants in Virginia? Well, more than 10% of Virginians were born outside of the United States. Very significant sort of benchmark that was just passed last year. More than 10% of Virginians born outside of the United States. Majority of the foreign-born are from Asia in Virginia. A lot of people think that they're Latinos, they're from Mexico or whatever. The majority of Virginia's foreign-born are from Asia, followed by Latin America. There's about a 30,000 person difference between those two demographics right now. So Virginia has about 7.1 million residents right now, 794,000 foreign-born Virginians. 43.8% are naturalized U.S. citizens. The 56.2% who are not yet U.S. citizens or are not U.S. citizens could be undocumented. They could be here with what's called temporary protected status from El Salvador, for example, in the D.C. metro area. huge population of Salvadorans in the D.C. metro area, over 125,000 Salvadorans who are here on temporary protected status. Now, what that means is you can be here legally, you can work legally, you're not on a path to citizenship. It's by executive order, and every 18 months, it can just end, or it can be renewed. A temporary protected status is a status that's given to countries that have been destroyed either by natural disaster or by a political disaster, and it's an interesting way. It almost functions like a foreign aid package, right? We allow the nationals of that country to be here legally, to work legally, and send money home to rebuild, but they're not on a path to citizenship. So these are the numbers, 11.9 million undocumented immigrants in the United States right now. That's the estimate from the Migration Policy Institute that just came out. In the run-up, in the last year and a half, there have been wildly different. Suddenly this 20 million number came out, estimate, that wasn't tracking all the other projections from the respective demographers, but obtained incredible traction, and suddenly people were talking about 20 million. I think it's significant. I think this makes much more sense when you break it down by state. Virginia's share, according to Jeff Pacell, a really respected demographer with the Pew Hispanic Center, estimating 250 to 300,000 unauthorized migrants in Virginia. So it's very important to understand who we're talking about so you understand why these different policies are impacting them the way they are. This is huge. Mixed status families. So as of 2005, 6.6 million families where one or more of the heads of household is unauthorized, right, undocumented. 3.1 million children living in those households who are U.S. citizens. So one of the things that you hear all the time from elected officials or candidates who are interested in doing something about immigration, right, they'll say over and over again, I'm not against immigrants. I'm against illegals, or I'm against undocumented immigrants, right? You hear that, you know, pretty often in the different debates, right? This is the problem with that way of thinking. Okay, you can no longer pass a policy in the United States that only impacts undocumented immigrants. You're going to be impacting millions of U.S. citizen children. I wanted to slip this in because I think tax issues inform policy a lot of times, and there's this myth that undocumented folks don't pay taxes. There was a study came out from the Commonwealth Institute just this earlier this year, found, well, you have undocumented folks living in Virginia are going to be paying certain amounts of taxes anyway, the sales, excise, income tax, property tax. And then when you add in the employer contribution, okay, if a worker is working under a fake Social Security number, as unfortunately often happens, you know, the employer is still required to pay the employer share of the payroll taxes. And so the estimated contribution in Virginia annually is $379 to $453 million paid in by undocumented workers in Virginia.
You're listening to a presentation by Tim Freilich from the Immigrant Advocacy Center about Virginia's immigrant communities and how they're being affected by workplace and border enforcement. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins the Immigrant Advocacy Center's Tim Freilich about Virginia's immigrants, how they are treated and mistreated under current law.
One of the things that I mentioned is going on is increased federal enforcement. All right, these are the different types of increased federal enforcement that we're seeing, right? The sort of first one that people think of is the Border Patrol, right? So there's been an increase in the number of Border Patrol officers. Dramatic increase in the last couple years in the number of folks working the border, particularly the southern border. Increased interior enforcement, okay? By that, we're talking about in the interior of the country, not along the border, right? There's been a huge push, really in the last 2 years, to increase the interior enforcement. There was a big push to pass comprehensive immigration reform in the federal level in 2006. Once that collapsed, the administration's response was, okay, you know, Congress didn't pass new laws. We're just going to enforce the ones that we have. People are asking us to do something, so this is what we're going to do. And so increasing the interior enforcement has had interesting effects, really, I think, on the debate about immigration, because suddenly immigration enforcement isn't something that's just happening down on the border. It's happening in our own communities. And inevitably, more and more folks are hearing firsthand or seeing or knowing somebody who is being directly impacted by the increased immigration enforcement in the interior. So increased workplace enforcement is part of that interior enforcement strategy. I'm going to talk more about that. The Absconder Initiative we'll talk about, and promotion of 287G partnerships between Immigration and Customs Enforcement. This is the new one branch of the new INS, right? It is called now ICE, for that nice friendly public image, and state and local law enforcement, okay, these agreements that they can enter into, and we'll talk about those. So workplace enforcement. Interestingly, between 1999 and 2003, there was a dramatic scaling back of workplace enforcement efforts. And so the Post found in 1999 you had 182 employers prosecuted for hiring undocumented workers. 417 of them were fined for a total of $3.6 million. Well, check it out. By 2003, four employers nationwide prosecuted for hiring undocumented workers, three of them fined and $212,000 in fines collected, right? When these numbers started getting out and when the debate about immigration reform started kicking up, there was a lot of noise about why aren't we doing any enforcement efforts whatsoever? And so I think as a result of the change of policy, enforcement, worksite enforcement, became so low that finally there was a backlash. An interesting consequence of the non-enforcing was then I guess they felt pressure to actually really step up those enforcement efforts, which we'll talk about in a minute. Another curious result that I meant to mention when I was talking about the increased border enforcement, okay, one of the things that has been really interesting to see, I've been doing this work for 10 years, to make up the World War II labor shortage, right? A program was put in place called the Bracero Program. It was the sort of first of the guest worker programs, right? Primarily Mexican workers would come up into the valley there in California. They'd work harvesting the crops, the hand crops, and then head back down to Mexico at the end of the season, right? Well, so these flows were established back and forth across the border of migrants coming up from Mexico, working, and then heading back at the end of the season. And even when I started working 10 years ago in Virginia, we were still primarily seeing folks who would do the same thing, come up, work the seasons, work the apple harvest, help pick the grapes there in central Virginia, and then head back down to Mexico, right? One of the really unexpected, I think, and unusual outcomes of the increased border enforcement, it got harder and harder to go back and forth. The Bracero program that I mentioned went from like 1942 to 1968, and then it ended suddenly. But by that point, you know, the flows were already in place, and the work, you know, the relationships between the employers and the laborers was firmly in place, and that didn't change after the program ended. What changed was that it became much more difficult for folks to still go back and forth with a legal status. The title screen had a fellow holding his ID card, and you could see he was an older fellow that we met in 2006 out on the eastern shore of Virginia. He was 68 years old at the time we met him. We started talking as we were just seeing where he's, and he said, you know, I was actually one of the original Braceros, right? And I was like, no way. You know, I've been doing this 10 years. I've only met one other Bracero the whole time, and that was down in Mexico, right? And he's like, oh, pues sí, yeah. I still have my original ID, right? And so this guy, who's 68 years old and is working on the eastern shore of Virginia, picking tomatoes and pounding stakes to stake out the tomatoes. If you've ever been there during the season, you see fields just filled with thousands and thousands of wooden stakes, right? That work in the hot sun on the eastern shore is paid at the time in 2006, was being paid at $5.15 an hour. So he was doing that work, and he goes to his room, and he comes back out, and he's holding a Kroger bag, a little plastic bag that's about that thick, right? He starts flipping through and immediately pulls out his ID, right? It's his original Bracero ID from 1959. And then he goes, I still have the original work contract. And he pulls out this tattered piece of paper and holds it up. It was to pick cotton in the town of Rule, Texas, in 1959. Stunning. He still had his original contract. And he's like, is there any way I can adjust my status? Because, you know, the program ended. I've been doing this my entire life. The 2 years that were sort of key, he was back down in Mexico taking care of a sick family member and wasn't able to adjust his status last time around. My point being, with the increased border enforcement, you have a lot more folks who have come up and stayed. And that's one of the reasons, I think, that we're seeing the increase in the immigrant population in Virginia in just the last few years. We run into far fewer people who are still going back and forth all the time. Many more people who are here for the jobs and staying for the jobs year round. And that's why we've seen, you know, in the last 10 years, dramatic shifts where 10 years ago in Charlottesville, where our office was based, if we wanted to talk to a migrant farm worker, we could go up to almost any Latino in Charlottesville and just start talking. And 98% of the time they were working, picking apples during the harvest. You know, now we're obviously seeing what people throughout Virginia are seeing, are folks working in a lot of different industries in all parts of the state. There's been a recent increase in the ICE workplace enforcement efforts, enough so that even people who don't follow these issues are taking notice because they're disrupting life in their normal, in their local communities. So there are a couple interesting ones that have happened in the last year. You had in Postville, Iowa, a kosher meat packing plant, Agriprocessors, Inc. They detained 389 workers. What was really significant about this raid was that in addition to rounding up the workers who couldn't prove that they were lawfully present, they charged them with crimes that are more typically used in identity theft situations. So somebody who was working under a Social Security number that they purchased, they were charged with identity theft or using somebody else's Social Security number. And the suggestion was, or the issue that's out there right now is, did somebody who has purchased a Social Security number from, you know, some document mill, were they trying to steal, you know, they may not even know whose Social Security number it is. They don't know, you know, they didn't get the Social Security number trying to take somebody else's identity. They just got it trying to get a Social Security number so they could work. And so it's raised all sorts of issues. But what happened is in 10 days, they tried and convicted about 300 folks with document fraud. In very quick trials, there's an amazing firsthand account by one of the interpreters who worked these that say they were just stunned at the way folks were moved through this process. It raised a lot of due process concerns among the immigrant advocacy community. And so when the next big raid occurred down in Laurel, Mississippi at the Howard Industries plant, 595 people were detained, the largest one in recent memory in the U.S., but very few criminal charges placed. The focus on most of the workplace enforcement is usually on the workers themselves. That's just the way it's always been. It's very rare, like you saw earlier with the statistics, at least in the early part of this decade, very few employers being charged for hiring undocumented workers.
You've been listening to a presentation by Tim Freilich from the Immigrant Advocacy Center about Virginia's immigrants and how they're being affected by workplace and border enforcement. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show.
This week's top three tips are about family and medical leave, or FMLA. The first tip is that FMLA requires covered employers to provide up to 12 weeks of unpaid job-protected leave to eligible employees for certain family and medical reasons. Usually, you must give 30-day advance notice when leave is foreseeable. The second tip is that an employer is covered only if it has at least 50 employees within 75 miles of where you work. The third tip is that an employee is eligible only if you have worked for your employer for a total of 12 months and worked at least 1,250 hours over those 12 months. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. More than 10% of Virginians were born outside of the United States. Out of every 9, 4 have become U.S. citizens, 2 are documented immigrants, and 3 are undocumented immigrants. Join us next week for the second of a two-part presentation by Tim Freilich at the Immigrant Advocacy Program about how these immigrants are treated and mistreated under current law. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wainwright. Oh.